Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. This is episode 194. We hope everyone's at home staying safe and healthy. We're glad that you tuned in once again, and I'm very, very happy to have back on the show my good friend of the show and everybody's favorite co-host, other than Daft J, I guess we could say, because I don't want to get her pissed off. Mr. Shane, the Sheriff Heron. Uh-oh. Welcome back to the show, buddy. How you doing?
Hi.
Hi. Can you be a little bit more engaged instead of the hi?
I always do the hi because I know you don't like hi.
You doing?
Oh, hey, what's up? What's that? I can't hear you.
I said, are you doing well?
Doing well? Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. Are you doing well?
I can't complain. Well, all things considered, so far, so good. And I've been enjoying getting together with people over the Skype or other social media outlets to be able to have conversations that, I guess, it's nice to be able to catch up with people, you know, considering that we would have been doing it at TCAF or Toronto Comic Con. We didn't get those things, so this is a nice outlet to reach out and talk with each other. Hello?
I don't like it.
You don't like it? No? You'd rather be in person?
I'd rather be in person or just not talk to someone.
But you're the one who always wants to podcast.
Like, yeah, wait till I see you.
Yeah, but you're the one who's always breaking my balls to podcast.
Okay. No, I like podcasting. Just saying, like, we were talking about the group chats with people always want to get, like, I've had multiple, like, group chats that I have that they're like, oh my god, everyone's inside, we should get on in, like, a video chat with each other, and then I, like, go on, and it's chaos, and it's annoying, and I hate it.
Yeah, the conference call, I'm not a fan of. But the one-on-one with one friend, I don't mind. But the whole group thing, it's like, ugh, it's a mess.
And also, I feel like because everyone's, like, inside now, people have more time. People want to reach out and talk more than they did before because people had lives. So everyone's just like, God, we should catch up and chat. And you're like, I don't want to do that. Like, just because we have more time to do it doesn't mean we should.
You're crazy. You're so weird. So would you consider yourself...
I'm not talking about, like, you. I'm talking about, like, you know, people that, like, you know, you're friendly with, your friends on Facebook, but, like, you don't really want to fucking hang out with them.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I'm just breaking your balls. Would you consider yourself an introvert, though, by nature, or do you like, you know, big get-togethers and the whole socializing on a regular basis? What would you say?
I have no idea, because I always considered myself, like, an introvert, because, like, I don't really like to be around a lot of people all the time. But then, like, as soon as I'm alone, I get kind of lonely. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll start, like, trying to get together with people. But also, like, I'll go to a party, and, like, I can be very, very social, especially if it's, like, a group of people I know really well. I feel like for the party kind of guy, and everyone's like, you're not an introvert at all, but I still feel like an introvert in a way. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, because people always said, oh, you know, you're very social, you can strike up conversation with everybody, I've been told, but I'm definitely an introvert. Like, I'm more than comfortable being at home by myself and not having to be with large groups of people. But at the same time, when I am with large groups of people, or when I am with a close-knit group of people, I really enjoy myself. Large groups, it's a little, it exhausts me. After a while, like, I can't do it for too long. I have, like, a threshold. So there's that fine line of, like, people who you can't really tell because they are social and they do talk, but they are actually introverts too. There's that middle ground. So we might fall into that middle ground.
Yeah, I think some. I like being around people I know and like.
Yes.
Like, but then you end up, you go to a party. Like, we went to the Raid social party after Fan Expo last year.
That was
and,
fun.
Like, you're there, and there's a bunch of people I want to talk to. But then I end up fucking stuck in some conversation with some dipshit outside showing me his comic book that I don't want to read. And then I spend the whole night, like, trying to just avoid this guy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, this sucks.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. I mean, I love being at the Raid social because it was, like, a who's who of who was at Fan Expo, but then at the same time I'm talking to you and Martin and the people that I know. So it's I'm similar. I want to just chit chat with the fellas that I'm comfortable with as it is. So I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, I don't like meeting new people. I hate new people. New people are the worst people.
How did we ever become friends when we both don't like meeting new people?
It's accident. Yeah. That's what people are always like, oh, how do you like make new friends then? And I was like, it's always an accident. Like it's like I remember one time I went to one of my close friend's wedding. Mm-hmm. And then they like, you know, you go to a wedding and you sit at a table and it's like they see you know, so you have a good table. And like half of the table was like my friends, and the other half was like people I didn't know. And then I looked at the other half of my friends were like at some other table with other people they didn't know. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, and so like on the day of their wedding I go up and like complain to the bride, you know, about me. And then I'm like, yo, I was like, what the fuck, like Ashley, like why'd you do this? Like, and she was like, we wanted people to mingle and like get to know each other. And I was like, this is stupid, like I don't want to meet these people, this is dumb. And then my friend Frank, who was sitting at my table, was like, no, like meet this other guy, like he seems like a cool guy. And I was just like, no, like fuck this guy, I don't want to talk to some person I don't know, I didn't come here for that. And then I got drunk, and then by the end of the night, me and that other guy were best friends, and I was like, this is my new friend.
There you go. Yeah, no, it should happen organically. Like, you don't necessarily intend or force that friendship, but if it happens, it happens. I agree. But yeah, that happened to me at a work party. I don't like
give people the benefit of the doubt, because people suck. Most of the time, you're disappointed.
It's true. It sounds so cynical, but I understand. I get it. How have things been on the artistic work front for you? Are you, I know that you're at the studio. How's the studio under the circumstances? Are people still going to work there, or is things different? How's it affecting that?
Oh, there's like nobody there. It's just been like, I think it's just like Ramon working from there mostly. When it was like not as serious, we were kind of going in, but still a lot of people were taking like just working from home, which as artists, a lot of people have that ability to work from home.
Right.
But then they did that thing where they like shut down the non-essential businesses, like anything. So then we were kind of like, you know what, maybe everyone should just work from home. So I think it's just literally like Ramon going into the studio right now. I had to go in the other day to grab like some art supplies, but most people are just like doing art stuff from home, just because it's, even if you don't think it's weird going in there, you tell someone else you're going into the studio or something and they get weirded out. So it's just this, like, it's just better to play it safe and just stay home.
Yeah. Is your did you find that once you had gotten into the rhythm of going to the studio when your schedule allowed it, made it more feasible, that there was like an improvement, or like you were getting more work done working at the studio, or do you find you could do the same amount at home?
Give me a second. Yeah, no, I think going in the studio, like, you know, we just did the new Cauldron and story I did heavily at the studio, and it's the first thing I really like accomplished working at the studio. And Scott Hepburn and Ramon and Marcus Toe, and they were all there, and like, you know, not over your shoulder, but you know, giving you little pointers here and there. So I think it turned out to be some of my best work so far. So I think there's definitely that. But I also found like I liked going to the studio sort of in the afternoon and then working, you know, so you get to see people, but there's not too many people there, and then people start leaving and it's, you know, just a few guys kind of around. And that was sort of like perfect for me, where you didn't, you have conversations and you chat, but not too much, and it doesn't become like a social thing.
Yeah, I guess that could easily happen, where you just enjoy the hangout and then you maybe not as much of the work is getting done. But there's got to be a good some type of a synergy, not a synergy, that might be the wrong word, but that inspiration that gets passed on from seeing, you know, Scott Hepburn work on something, or even I'm trying to think of other people that are there. I know there's tons, Marcus Toe or whoever it might be. And it just, what you see them doing or how they do it just sparks a fire in you. Does that happen? Do you find being there?
Oh yeah, very much. And not even just being there, like we have a Slack group where we all chat and show each other stuff. It's a range from what it's like to be with the studio, but a lot of guys will share their own work and stuff like that. So yeah, there's especially like there's the we're putting together the new anthology, the Raid 4 anthology. So seeing updates from different people on the stuff they're working on, and then get kind of fired up because it's like, I don't know, man, just, yeah, you see this great work and you just want to be a better artist, a better just to sort of keep up with.
Yeah. Shane, and for the listeners, we got a poor connection with the Skype right now. It's coming up on my screen. So if you hear it be choppy, we're not doing it on purpose. I don't know if we got to change room locations, but just a heads up, Shane. It's showing poor connection on our conversation.
You think it's me or you think it's you?
I'm not sure. Are you using your cell phone?
I'm using my cell phone, but I'm like near my like my modem, so this connection will be stronger.
Yeah, I'm on my modem too. I'm not sure. It could be a bunch of things. Maybe more people are at home today because it's a holiday. So just bear with us, folks, as we chat. We're going to try to make this as clear as possible. So tell me about the cauldron story. Is this cauldron story that you completed, was it the fill-in thing that you did for Cauldron 3, or is this now going into Cauldron 4?
No, this is for Cauldron 3. Like, it's done now. The book is done, it's printed, and we have no cons to sell it at.
Right. So...
yeah, so this was... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Continue. I was going to ask you. Go ahead.
Yes, so this issue was supposed to come out last year in the fall. It was supposed to be fall 2019 issue of Cauldron. We had an issue where one of... off the face of the earth where he was story done, so we basically couldn't get a hold of him, so we just decided to take my story that I was going to do for the next issue 4. Basically I did that to put into this issue to fill that slot, which just took a little bit longer, so it just delayed everything. So we've just, because we had the book ready in the spring, we just retitled it to spring 2020 issue.
Right.
But it is the third technical issue of Cauldron, and then yeah, so we had that ready for the March Comic Con, which obviously never happened, and now TCAF's not happening. So we're just waiting around until we can like sort of get back to somewhat normal and, you know, launch the book and have a signing and that type of thing.
Right. And if I remember hearing from Casey as well as Ricky, you guys almost have book 4 almost all complete. Is that right?
Not almost all complete, but it's definitely like everyone's working on it. One, I think we have two stories that are almost done out of the 4, and there's definitely good progress going on it. And because the plan for that was to have the book done by June, launch the Kickstarter, print it and get the book ready for. Well, but now there's so much uncertainty. We're still putting the book together. We're just not sure, you know, when to release it and that type of thing now.
Yeah. How do you guys, like, what's, I know there's no way to anticipate or to even really properly plan, because it's all, I guess, conjecture and speculation at this point. But what would be the ideal thing now going forward? Is it Fan Expo is the next place now to do Cauldron 3, or would you have Cauldron 3 and 4 if it would be ready at that time? Like, how would you go about it?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're still kind of figuring that out, and we haven't really sat down to like try and figure out a game plan yet. Again, just because everything's so uncertain right now. But assuming Fan Expo is going to happen, which I think that will happen, like in my opinion.
I hope so.
I don't know how the states are going to be affected, but like I think Canada will be in a good place by August. So I'm assuming Fan Expo is going to be a go. I don't know if we'll have done any signings and appearances for issue 3 by then, but we'll have issue 3 then. We may have to push back the schedule and do like maybe launch, you know, our Kickstarter that weekend while selling 3. We're promoting the Kickstarter for 4 or something like that. And then maybe have it like we found that like instead of maybe having the book for Fan Expo, maybe having it for a little bit later and have it for like October for Halloween, that kind of fits the like theme better anyway. So we might try and do something like again until we start to know what's going to happen with cons and shows and signings at stores and stuff like that. We really just don't know how to plan for this.
Yeah, it's tough. Especially for the, I mean, comic shops are one thing. We were talking about that before we pressed record, wondering how it's going to affect the comic shop. But even like the indie artists and people, maybe is now a good time for Kickstarters to happen because there's no comic shop for you to go to. So, you know, you can back something that local or international creators are making. Or is it a bad time to do that because people don't have the money to do it? It's so hard to figure this thing out right now, but I'm sure you guys will have the right game plan once there's some sort of news where we can proceed with caution, but again a little bit more normal when the cons and shops open up again. So tell me about the story.
I was just gonna say one more thing on like Kickstarter notes is, so I've been working with, like Mike mentioned in the last episode, like that I'm helping them with their Kickstarter for Dodge, and I'm working on another project with another guy helping him with his Kickstarter, and we'll have the Cauldron ones. And I'm trying to think, like, you're right, like people might not have enough money because it's like the economy's hard or they don't know where their next paycheck's coming from. But also I think there's a lot of people home looking at their computers all day long now more than before.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that are just looking to fill a void. They can't get the Marvel DC comics. They might try something new. So I'm having a feeling it's going to be kind of the same. Like it's sort of just level out, and like a Kickstarter will kind of not be super affected by this, but we really don't know until we start seeing people launch and fail miserably or whatever. But we really don't know yet. So yeah, I think it's going to be kind of the same.
Yeah. I think we got a little bit of lag when I ask a question and you hear it, so that's why we're kind of interrupting each other. It's all good though. Tell me about the story that you did for Cauldron, because it's very adultish, is it not?
It is. Well, that was the whole idea of Cauldron, is that we wanted to make something that reads kind of like the old heavy metal magazines. Mm-hmm. I always like. I say that like the first time I ever saw Heavy Metal magazine, I was at like a friend's house. I think this was grade 5 or 6 or something like that, when I was mostly just getting into regular type comic books. And I thought, you know, comic books were superheroes and Archie and stuff like that. And then my buddy showed me this like Heavy Metal comic, and there was nudity and sex. And I was just like, oh my God, like I didn't even know this was like allowed, like that you could do this in a comic book. And then I remember specifically like his mom coming downstairs, and we had to hide the magazine like under the couch or something like that. And so I just like, I keep telling these guys I want Cauldron to sort of have that sort of feel. Like if some like teenage kid was reading it, he'd have to hide it from his mom or something like that. And like, I want it to be, what I found was with a lot of creators, when you end up calling something mature readers, they end up going like the Marvel Max route and just everything's super violent, where I'm like, we can do anything. Like, you can do nudity, you can do sex, you can do nuanced artistic. So that's what we're trying to do. And I think this issue of Cauldron is our best one yet. Like, this is the third one, and I think we have 4 different comic book stories and 1 prose story, and they all are visually different, but they all sort of fit the nice aesthetic of what we're going for. But did you want me to talk about mine in particular, or just overall?
What you worked on particularly.
Yes. So my story is, it's called Come Slither, and it's basically like this, you know, generic Conan-ish barbarian guy, and he has like a run-in with Medusa in these like wintry woods in the middle of who knows where, some fantasy land. And I was originally going to do it as a silent story, but my friend Steve Cruikshank is a really, really great songwriter, and I wanted to work with him. And so he basically wrote a song that goes in like the lyrics. So when you read the comic, you're reading the lyrics of the song or poem that like overlays and sort of like fits, not exactly what's going on, but it like, you know, kind of goes with the theme of what you're reading. And then he ended up making a music video with the art of it, which turned out pretty cool.
Yeah, I was gonna when I saw the YouTube video that you sent for that story, I'm like, did Shane, is this a song that Shane, it just worked perfectly, or he drew to a song that had already existed, or did they write the song to this? I didn't know, because it sounded so professional. Like, I'm sure it's professional because he's a songwriter and a musician, but it was really well done, and it blended really well together. I think it was a cool feature to have with your story. What made you want to go that extra route? Because Cauldron is a, you know, for mature reader book, but you made it much clearly like this is mature readers. You had the, you know, the sex scenes and things in it. What made you did is just something you wanted to draw, challenge yourself aesthetically to see what you could do with the surroundings, because it is a Conan the Barbarian-esque type of story. Where did that inspiration come from?
I think like my go-to, my first story in Cauldron, and then this is my second story that I've done, there are like these Conan-esque kind of like characters. I kind of like, I had this story in mind on for a while. And then I just, I really liked issue one of Cauldron. Issue two was a good issue. I just felt like we didn't really hit the mark of what I wanted, like for the mature readers. I don't know. There was a couple stories in there that they look like they could just be in sort of regular comic books, and they didn't feel like specifically special. And so I kind of wanted to amp it up. I wanted to amp up like, you know, some nudity and some sex, and just like, just challenge, you know, make it a little bit more sort of artistic in different ways. And I think like Bobby Gorfield did that with her. She basically did like, she pitched it to us as like lesbian Conan. And so we like, I thought that was great. And they nailed it on that story. So that turned out really good. And then, yeah, like, I don't know. I wanted to amp up the sort of sexuality a little bit in this book. So that's like, we kicked it up a notch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the I didn't see the full book as in its totality, but from the music video with the details and just the backgrounds and everything that you had in this story, I feel like your work has like, you, I'm seeing constant progression. Like, it's looking good, and it's like you're really starting to come into your own more and more. So I'm excited for the next stories that you tell, because I don't know if it's, it could be being around the Raid guys, or just the you know, putting the pen to paper more often, that is just making the work start to really, the strengths in it are starting to look beautiful. Not that your art wasn't great before, but it's good when you see like, wow, they're getting better. Like, I didn't think they, you know, sometimes you hear even musicians like, wow, I thought you were good before, but like you're getting even better. So it's cool, man. It's really good.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I appreciate that. I think I attribute that to a lot of, yeah, definitely being at the studio. And I know Scotty helped me a lot on certain panels. Just he'd look at what I was doing and just help me with composition, which is something that I don't really think about as much as I should. And that helped a lot for this story, for sure. And, you know, little things like Ramon will walk by and just, like, give me some tips on how to do some ink washes and stuff like that, and lend me some of his brushes and that type of thing. And also a lot of it has just been working side by side with Casey Parsons a lot, because his stuff is just incredible and he continues to get better, and I just watch what he's doing, and I'm just like, I want to try and emulate that too. And like, I see the way he like lights something and I'm like, oh, look at those highlights, like, oh, and then it's, you know, sort of things just click and make sense to you and that type of thing. So I think it's been definitely like a mixture of all those things. And also I think working on Cauldron with Ricky and Sam and Casey, and then all these other creators we want to work with, it's just been really fun to put the book together. And I think that comes out too, like when you're enjoying working on something, it shows in the work.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. And sometimes like I've, you know, engaged in creative endeavors myself, but I find that my creativity is usually sparked when I see someone else's creativity. Like you were saying, you're watching Casey and you want to emulate something that he did, and as you emulate, you discover your own voice or your own look in whatever it is you're doing. So
yes, I think exactly.
It's extremely important to, even though creating is a lot of times it's collaborative, but then there's a certain aspect of it that's very solitary in your own mind. It's so important to be around people who are also creating, because it just like constantly lights that fire, which is good. So how are things going?
Rising tide raises all ships, right? So like, you're just like, you know, even if you're being competitive, it's good with other people, like how everyone just starts improving to like get, want to be better.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I listen to fellow podcasters and I see things that they're doing that I like, and I say, okay, they're doing that. What can I do? I can't do what they do, but what is it that I can bring to the table to keep my, not to compete with them, but just to stay, you know, up to challenging yourself by being inspired by what they've done. You know, it's important to have that. Hello?
Yeah, for sure.
No problem.
You're gonna ask something before, and then I cut you off.
Oh no, no problem. I was gonna say, how are things going with Morris or any of the other books that you have on the slate to create?
It's good actually. I'm getting into doing the layouts still. Like, again, I want to have that book for Fan Expo, but we'll see if Fan Expo happens. But the plan is still to go ahead. Right now, my focus is the Raid 4 anthology, which is just an eight-page story that I'm working with a guy at the studio. His name's Andrew Healy. He's a really good writer, just a really good dude in general. And we've come up with a cool story. It's kind of like about, I don't want to say too much about it, but it's about like basically like, you know, like the 27 club of like musicians, people that die at 27 years old.
Right.
Hello?
Hey, I'm here.
I couldn't hear you. I thought I lost you for a sec. But yeah, you know, like the 27 Club. So it's basically like, it's a story dealing with basically like our angle of like why these characters die at like 27 years old and like what's the point of that. So it's really good. And I think I'm really going to be stepping up my game for this one, because we got the script down finally, and then I'm going to have to start laying it out. And for the Raid anthologies, I know that the art goes to Ramon, and he basically like grabs his big red pen and like, you know, X's stuff out or whatever and tells you how to like improve stuff. So I'm really looking forward to like getting feedback from him on how to make it look as good as possible. So I think that's going to really help me like up my game a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And being part of that Raid anthology, that's a really good place to be, because the exposure that you'll get from it, those books are in almost every comic book shop I've been to, and you've got a lot of big names attached to that because of Raid and Ramon Perez, who's, you know, everybody knows Ramon Perez. But to have your work featured in a book like that, that a lot of people buy, it's a great look to have for you as an artist. So
yeah, I think so. It also, I was kind of annoyed, like, not annoyed, it's not anyone's fault but mine, but last year at the Fan Expo, I was, like, at the end of the row for the Raid guys, and everyone had, like, a story in the anthology. They had three anthologies, and I was not in one of them. And then people would come down and get all the books signed, and then they'd get to me, and I'd be like, I'm not signing the book. I didn't do anything in it. And people would be like, oh, well, you could still sign it. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to sign it. Like, I didn't. So this time it's like, I definitely want to be in the book just to feel like more part of the team for sure. And we've come up with a cool story, I think, Andrew and I. And also for me, it's like less about the exposure and like, you know, I mean, that's always great if that happens. But for me, it's more about like, this is like you're going to school, man. And like, I'm going to learn a lot of lessons and get better. So for me, it's just about like upping my craft and trying to get to the next level. Like, that's the whole reason I wanted to join the Raid studio, was to like, you see my place, I don't need the space. It's about like being around these guys, and you know, there's a lot of intangible things that help you level up as an artist.
Yeah, absolutely. And that sense of community and people, you know, helping each other, challenging each other, it's all good. I mean, making this stuff, comic book artists and writers, so many of them say, you know, we're alone all the time. Like, social distancing is not a problem for us. That's, we live our whole lives having to do this. But to have that sense of community, especially at a place like Raid, where it's got a legacy now, it's cool to be a part of that. And why not, if you have the opportunity, like, for sure, do it.
Yeah. It's been really good, and I'm finally start since, like, you know, like, I joined up last year in February, but I was like super busy with my day job and barely getting into the studio. I didn't feel until like Fan Expo last year that I actually became like a part of the studio and like really felt like, you know, I felt like a guy who was just going into other people's studio, and now I feel like it's like home when I go there, you know.
Yeah, that's good. It takes time, right? Because you have your own, like you said. Just because guys are behind a table at Fan Expo, everybody thinks that they're rock stars, and a lot of them still have to have day jobs to pay the bills in order for them to make the comics that you end up buying. So it's a transition to become a full part of the studio when you first join. So it's natural. But
yeah, and it's also like the guys at the studio, we always see like the big name, we think of it as like a comic studio, but there's so many guys that are working in animation, storyboards, you know, like movie posters, like that type of thing. So there's a lot of guys that aren't even doing comic book work.
Right, exactly. And what do you learn from those guys who are very much involved in art, in the arts and storytelling, but they're not necessarily making comic books? What are things that you can take away from those guys in regards to what you're putting together?
Well, I think it's like it's things that just make you stronger as an artist in general. Like, not, there's a lot of artistic things that you do that are not made just for comic books. Like, right. Again, it's things like perspective, composition, you know, just different, like, you know, anatomy and form and stuff like that, and looking at different ways people draw stuff. So it's like there's no one right way to do it. And I think a lot of the strongest comic book artists are guys that come from other fields and have a background in like design or stuff like that. So I think there's those sort of, again, they're like, it's like an intangible thing. It's just, you know, walking by a guy's desk, he's working on some crazy poster, and you're like, ooh, like, oh, I just see the way you do that. Or like, even if it's not something like specific that you're seeing, it's just the inspiration of seeing that, oh, you can do that type of thing. You can do things like that. That's cool.
Yeah, that is awesome. While we're all in our homes right now and people have a lot of extra spare time, I've been asking all of the guests to do a top five with me, and me and you always do top five lists with Martin, so we're kind of known for that shtick. So me and you came up with a top five that you wanted to do that we, I don't think we've ever done on this show, which is our top five books, actual books with no pictures
in them. Real books.
Real books.
Real books.
I'm talking to an artist who wanted to talk about books with no pictures in it. So I was like, all my options are going to be sound so lame, and you're going to probably have all these cool Tolstoy and Dostoevsky or whoever it is, Dickens, and I'm not going to have anything cool. So do you want to
read is Dickens and Tolstoy,
Hemingway. Yeah. And I just read like books that turn into movies.
Well, I was just like, don't you real, like, no, and that's fine. Like, I think a few of the ones I'll have on my list are like ones that have been turned into movies too. But like, it's like, what, you don't just read fucking books? Like, you only read comic books?
There was a time where I was reading quite a number of novels when I would take the subway to work. It was great because it was all this downtime where I could finish a book in a couple days or a week depending on the book, so I loved it. But then when I got back into reading comics and starting the podcast, a lot of times I'm reading because I'm prepping for something, and then when I'm not prepping for something, I just feel like reading something different. And then you read so many, I feel like with comics you're reading so many stories and so many books. Like, you could read three in a day, whereas with a novel, it's like that one book you kind of live with, which is a great experience. But when you have that sort of, I don't know if it's attention deficit, but you're like, I want more, I want more, I want more. You like, I'm just going to read comic books. So I haven't read a novel in a little bit of time, which I'm kind of not embarrassed, but I mean, it is what it is. I just like my coloring books now. My superhero.
See, I'm different though. Like, I like whether it's a comic book or a movie or a new music album or whatever, like a novel, I don't like to consume too much. Like, if it's really good, I like to just digest that, you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't want to read like five different comic books in one day. I want to read one and really just, if I like it, really just sit back and like take it in and enjoy it and think about it and, you know, like just let it die brain and just be like, how, you know, why did I like this type of thing? Or, you know, what did I like about it and that type of thing? So for me, it's not about quantity at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel good when I've read like three of my graphic novels in a week because I buy more than I should. I think that's where I feel good about it. But I do like to spend, like you said, especially when you're about to talk to somebody about their work, you do have to let it resonate with you and really take it in a little bit more than usual. So I totally get what you're saying because I try to do that myself. So let's kick off this list. I think it's a good idea. It made me have to go back and think about the many books that I actually have read, books. So start your list. Where do we begin with your top five novels?
Hold on, because as unprepared as I am, I mean, as even though I suggested this thing, I didn't really prepare about this because I wasn't sure if we're actually doing it. So I'm sitting there now looking at my bookshelf, and I'm like, I should have at least my top five favorite books on my bookshelf, but maybe not. I have like four right now that I'm just looking for through the other ones to see what else I got. Are you prepared?
Yeah, I've only read five books in my life, so I'm good. No, I'm just kidding.
So, my best friend Mike, we like grew up together all through like you know, elementary, junior high, high school, that school, that type of thing. And we always talk about this because he's only ever read one novel in his entire life, and he read the, you know, the Outsiders. They made like the movie out of it.
Yeah, I love that book.
Yeah, so he read that book. That's the only book he's ever read, and. Every single time he did a book report, like growing up, so like from like grade 6 to like 12, he would just always, anytime there was a book report, he would just do his book report on The Outsiders. And I heard him do like, I heard him do this book report like 5 times.
Stay gold, Tony boy.
Yeah, it would be so funny. Like, he would get up in front of the class and he'd just like look at me and he'd be like, the book I chose for my book report is called The Outsiders, and then I'd just be like fighting back, fucking laughing.
That is a good book, though.
So don't feel bad. Don't feel bad.
No, I've read, yeah, I know. I read a lot more than five books. I'm just playing. I actually have a bookshelf with books on it.
See, now I'm trying to debate whether I should go with like fiction, nonfiction. Should we just go with? Are all of yours one or the other?
I think the ones that I picked for this list is they're fiction, but there was a time, and I know this sounds really like not classical literature at all, but there was a time where I was like reading every wrestling autobiography that I could. So I read a bunch of those as well, which were really good.
Did you start with the Mick Foley one?
I didn't. I started with, I think, oh man, I don't even remember which one I started with. My favorite one, of course, was the Bret Hart one, but that's because it wasn't a WWF licensed book, so he was able to be a lot more candid about a lot of things. Whereas the other books, you can
talk about the Montreal Screwjob.
Oh, of course, but he does get into a lot of like behind the scenes stories that I don't think you would have gotten away with a licensed WWE book, which was cool. So that's why,
I just remember, I think it was like 20 years ago when like Mick Foley put out his autobiography, but they included all his like spelling errors and poor grammar and stuff like that. Like they didn't edit that. And I just remember everyone was reading that and loving it.
Yeah. I think that was one of the first that really got the attention of how interesting these books could be with all of the stories that these guys have. His book really made an impact, made a splash. One of the other ones I really liked was Ric Flair, actually, hearing his life story. He got into a plane crash and all kinds of stuff where it's like, I don't know how he's still alive and how he ended up having the longevity of a career that he had. His book was excellent. Things I never would have even considered because I didn't care for Ric Flair as a wrestling fan as a kid, because he was just that guy who was always a bad guy, but he looked like a wimp sort of thing. And then you realize just how good he actually was when you read his book.
Yeah.
And then you watch
And he
the
made everyone
matches.
else look good.
Exactly. So that his book was an education of wrestling for me more than any other book.
Yeah, I think of all my buddies that we're all like, they're all still into wrestling. I'm the only one who seemed to grow up, but we all like basically have decided that Ric Flair is our favorite wrestler. Like everyone loves Ric Flair unanimously.
Yeah, and even for me, having always kind of rooted against him, I can, as much as Bret Hart is my favorite, I'll always say Ric Flair was like number one. He is the guy. He's the GOAT. 372 matches in a year. That's more than one you could do per day. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's nuts. Like, I mean, I think we were at your house. We were watching like a documentary on him too, and he was talking about like how much he drank when he was younger, like on the road. And
yeah,
he was like, yeah, I'd have 14 like, you know, mixed drinks and like 7 beers, and they'd be like, well, like in like how often? He'd be like, every single day. I was like, that's nuts, man. Like, that's so crazy.
It's crazy. It's one of the, when you hear about all these wrestlers who die young, you get it, and then you look at him, it's like, how you're still alive has defied every odd. It's incredible.
Yeah. He's like a Keith Richards type character. Yeah, like, how is he still alive among all these other people who have passed away?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good example. So you got your five? Did you finalize?
Yeah, I was like, are we going with like fiction, nonfiction?
Anything you want.
I have. It's so hard, man. There's so many good books, you know, because I'm so well read. You know, I'm such a scholar. I'll have you know that none of my books are Hemingway or Tolstoy or Dickens or any of the classics that you thought I was going to choose for some reason.
Okay, no problem. I'm disappointed.
I have a. You want to hear something funny that just look at my bookshelf now? So, have you ever read Moby Dick?
No.
So, I've tried to read Moby Dick many, many times, and I can't get through it. Like, I'm just so not interested in it, but I feel like I should read it. Like, it's Moby Dick. I should have read this. But I read, like, the beginning of it, like, the Call Me Ishmael, like, so many times. I just can't get into Moby Dick. So, I ended up buying this book at BMV. And you know what this book is called? This book is called Why Read Moby Dick. And it's a book about why you should read Moby Dick. And I've yet to read that either.
Just to convince you, a book to convince you to read the book.
Yeah, I think my Moby Dick is reading Moby Dick.
There you go. Wow, that's there you go. I like that.
That's how not into the classics that I am. For some reason, you thought I was into. You thought I was like really smart.
No, but you have read books that are considered classics that are maybe from the 60s or 70s. That it might not be okay, Moby Dick, but you've read a couple books that
I have.
Well, I would say Catch 22 is a classic. That's your favorite book, right?
Oh, holy shit, man. That's not even in my pile, though. That's got to go to the top of the list.
There you go.
Because I actually I gave away my copy of it, so I don't have a copy of it right now. That's why I'm not like, yes, that's like the greatest book ever. You okay, see? Now I have to remove something from this list. All right. okay. Yeah. Okay, we're good.
There you go.
So I'm going to try and do my best to not choose ones because – I'm looking at, like, I really love True Grit, and I also love No Country for Old Men, which were both turned into great movies by the Coen brothers. But, like I love the books, but I'm not going to choose them just because I think the movie's better than that. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. You got choppy for a second, so I was just waiting for it to come back through. I'm sorry. I'm here, though.
I moved Wilkins, so now I have to, like, I moved locations here. I need to move back to where I was. I'm just trying to not disturb Chris.
No problem.
Have to listen to my nonsense. Okay. All right. I'm looking at my books here. All right. So I'll go first now. My top five.
Yeah. Go ahead. You first.
Okay. I'm going to go with it's called The Elfstones of Shannara. It's a fantasy book by Terry Brooks. Have you ever heard of Terry Brooks?
Yeah, I read the book called Eric from Terry. It was a Terry Brooks. It was Faust, and then he scratched it out and put the name Eric on top. I think it was Terry Brooks, or I could be confusing him for somebody else.
That doesn't sound right at all. That doesn't sound right. Now I'm
No,
trying to Google that to
sorry,
like a,
Terry
okay.
Pratchett. It was
No, Terry Pratchett.
Terry
That's who you're
Pratchett.
thinking of.
That's who it was. Yes. Continue.
Oh, yeah. So that's not this guy. I
No, it's not that
think Terry
guy.
Pratchett's also like a prolific fantasy writer. But yeah,
Yes.
Terry Brooks is like he's been around, I think. So this Elfstones is it's part of the Shannara series. There's like a million of them now, but originally there was like three that were like the trilogy, and there was the first one was called the Sword of Shannara. This one's the Elfstones of Shannara, and then the third one was called the Wishong of Shannara. And it kind of like I think he doesn't get enough credit because it's kind of like it's almost like very derivative of like I mean I guess there's that like Joseph Campbell like a hero with a thousand faces, but it literally feels like the Shannara series feels to me like it's like some sort of mashup between like Star Wars and like Lord of the Rings, like the way he takes the characters and just makes it like more concise and like but I really liked them a lot because I thought I don't know like I remember reading Lord of the Rings since being like, what is this nonsense? Like, it just took forever and ever, and I just really didn't appreciate it, and I didn't like reading like about like hobbits singing songs and stuff like that. So I would like so the Shannara series to me is kind of like if Lord of the Rings was better and more concise and like more to the point. So yeah, the Elfstones was my favorite one. It's the first one I read. I read it in like I think like grade eight, and I just remember being like consumed with it because this is like I don't know 560 pages, something like that. So, but yeah, it's about it's like the second one in the series, and it's about this kid Will Ormsford, who's like your protagonist. And then there's another guy. There's these instead of like Jedis or the wizards like Gandalf, sorry, they have these druids who are essentially just like rip-offs of like like Gandalf and stuff like that. So they in this one they have like his name's Alanon, and he's pretty badass, and it's a pretty good book. And I watched in the past like 3 4 years, I guess because of the success of like Game of Thrones, they MTV tried to do like their own version. So they adapted like the Shannara series into like a television story series called The Chronicles of Shannara, and they tried to adapt this story, and it's so bad, it's so awful. I tried to watch it, and it's just like pretty shit.
That's the worst. When something you really love and you see that's so good, when you tell people like this is so good, and then someone watches a show and they're like, yeah, I'm not giving that a chance. That's the worst.
I don't think it's the worst because, like, for me, it's I'm able to like separate them and realize that I said I have the original material, whether it's a comic book or a novel. So yeah, and to me, that's I can always go back to that as much as I want. So
Right.
I don't need a TV show or movie to do it. If it's cool and it works out, great. But most of them are not going to be great adaptations of stuff like that. So
Right.
I'm okay with like if it's not. If it's not great, like I remember, I always talk about like the Preacher TV show, and I remember like I love Preacher the comic book, and I watched the show, and I remember first episode in, I was just like, I'm not gonna enjoy this. I'm gonna sit here and just be annoyed that they're changing stuff. But then I realized like this isn't for me. This is for someone who's never read the books or something like that, right?
Right. No, I think when I say that, it's more so it's you want the show to be, it's like kind of, I don't, you've probably never seen Daredevil on Netflix, but Daredevil, the show, people be like, that's so good. And then you say, well, now you should read the comic because if you think the show is good, you got to check the actual source material. But when they make the adaptation so embarrassing, it makes people not want to check out what's actually good about it. That's when I'm like, oh, they totally botched it to make people want to go to the actual good stuff. You know what I mean?
Oh, you see, I don't think of it like that because I think of like I knew a ton of people that would be super into the Netflix Marvel shows and the Daredevil and that stuff that would never ever in a million years go back and read the comic books anyways. Like to them, they're
That's
just
true.
not going to read a comic book,
Yeah, that's
but
true.
they'll watch a TV show. So like, it doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah, that's true. So the
Anyways,
Chronicles of
my
Shannara.
Shannara. Chronicles of Shannara is the
That's the
TV
show.
series, and they adapted it. But this is the second book in the first series called The Elfstones of Shannara. I used to have all the books, and then I realized I didn't really care that much, so I just kept the second one. With like they've done like new covers, but I kept the original
Yeah.
covers, because it's really cool. And I think the first this one, the there's some illustrations throughout the book, and it's illustrated by some guy named Daryl K. Sweet, and the illustrations are pretty cool. But in the first one, the Sword of Shannara, it's illustrated by do you know who the Hildebrandt brothers are?
It sounds familiar. Sounds, but
They did a lot of like Lord of the Rings illustrations and stuff like that. But if you get a chance, look up the Hildebrand brothers. They also did the illustrations for the Sword of Shannara, which was the first one in the series, which I don't like as much as the
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at the
Elfstone.
I'm looking at Terry Brooks now, and the Shannara series is the first thing that pops up. Very cool.
Yeah. He did a couple other series that just weren't as successful. And then, like, with the Shannara series, they just kept it going and, like, just beat a dead horse. And so, like, if you just read the first three, then it's good. You can go into other ones if you're really into that world. But, like, I kind of, like, after a while, it's like, just keeps going and going. And I was just like, I'm just not that interested. It feels like they're just doing the same shit over and over again.
Did you ever read the Wheel of Time series, those books from Robert Jordan? Are you into those too? I've never read them, but I know people who really like fantasy are into those books.
No, I when I got into Terry Brooks and I'd read every like all the books as a teenager, like all the books that had come out under the Shannara series, I like, got into like Lord of the Rings and wasn't as into it. And then I tried to read other like fantasy authors, so like Wheel of Time, and there was another guy, maybe it was Terry Pratchett or something like that. But I remember trying to read other fantasy stuff and hoping I would like it as much as the Shannara stuff, and I just really wasn't that into it. And I realized like I'm just not that into like this fantasy stuff. I just happen to really like the Elfstones.
Did you like the Lord of the Rings movies?
Yeah, kind of.
right.
I just think they're too long, man. Like, in my opinion, like I just don't have the attention span for it. Movies just shouldn't be over 2 hours. Like 2 hours should be the max for any movie. And like, I don't know. I remember watching them and just like, especially the last one, it just like he throws that fucking ring in, and it's like another hour. Like the book, like the story climaxes, and then you got like another hour of like winding down and wrapping stuff up, and like. I just remember thinking they're like a little bit too long, but like visually they're pretty cool.
Yeah, visually they're incredible. They're a good winter time stay inside kind of movie to watch as a trilogy. You know you're not going to be going anywhere for a while, but that third one is definitely after you the they throw the ring in, it's like wow, they really stretch this thing out. And some of it is in like slow motion too. All right.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I do. I think I would rather watch those movies than read the books, that's for sure.
All right, my first pick is something I read in high school as well. I had to do one of those, I guess book reports is the easiest way to describe it, and I didn't know what book to pick. So my English teacher took something off her shelf, handed it to me, and said, "Try this, you should like it." And it was from W.P. Kinsella, Shoeless Joe. I don't know if you ever knew the book Shoeless Joe, but you definitely know the movie. And I read the
Is it
book.
an autobiography of Shoeless Joe?
No, it's not. It's the movie is Field of Dreams. Shoeless,
Oh, okay, yeah.
yeah, Shoeless Joe was the book, and I read the book. I had never seen the movie or even known that it had been adapted to that. So I was reading this book trying to figure it out, and then the part where the famous quote, "If you build it, they will come," kept happening, and I'm like, this sounds familiar, because I'm like 15, 16 years old, and I'm like, this sounds like a movie, some famous quote, and then I put two and two together. But the book, what's interesting about the book, which changes in the movie, which of course the book is always a little bit better, but you've seen Field of Dreams, Shane, right?
Not in a long, long time though. Like as a kid, I remember seeing it and not appreciating it.
Okay. Well, the
But I
dream.
know of it,
Yeah, you know
and
of it.
you've seen it parodied like a lot. Like I remember the first time I saw "If You Build It, They Will Come" was like they were doing it on like Married with Children, like
Yes.
Al Bundy was building some stupid thing. And
Yeah.
I remember being like, "What is this?"
Yeah, exactly. I remember that episode too. So in the Shoeless Joe, it's very like the obviously the plot and everything is very similar to what you see in the movie, but the character that James Earl Jones plays in the movie, in the book, it's actually J.D. Salinger, who is the, of course, famous author
Okay.
of Catcher in the Rye. So it's kind of
Yeah.
cool to see the story be told or read the story dealing with a real life writer who became a recluse, and the main character Ray Kinsella going on that road trip and experiencing all the things that they experience while talking, hypothetically, of course, to J.D. Salinger, and kind of getting into the mind of that guy who everyone has always wanted to understand and who is very well known for a piece of literature like Catcher in the Rye. So I was kind of getting a lot of information and appreciation for baseball while reading it. And at the same time, there's a lot of heart in regards to the main character, trying to understand and learn about his father and pouring himself into something he's passionate about, while at the same time talking to his favorite author of all time. And you learn about J.D. Salinger through that book, which was kind of cool. So I ended up really enjoying this book. I bought it again one day at BMV when I saw that same copy that my teacher had given to me. I hope to read it again, maybe on a vacation or something, because it is a really feel-good, heartfelt book. And of course, I'll always say it's better than the movie, but the movie does a really good
But
job.
you're on a vacation right now.
Yeah, I am on a vacation, but right now this is the podcast vacation. I'm talking about like a real vacation.
Okay, yes,
Yeah. So my first pick of a novel, Shoeless Joe, aka Field of Dreams. I'm gonna do that every book. I'm gonna tell you the movie that they made it out of, because it's all popcorn books that I read.
is every single book on your list has been made into a movie?
One of them hasn't, but a book in the series has. If that makes
Okay, all
sense.
right. Well, to be honest, I think all of mine have been made into movies or adaptations except for one. So I guess if they're good enough books, they're gonna adapt them into
That's you.
something.
Yeah,
So
that's what I
I
was
can't hold them.
realizing. You can't, help that from happening.
As long as you've actually read the book and you're not just watching the movie and pretending you've read the book like someone would.
No, I actually read these books.
That's cool, actually. I didn't know that Shoeless Joe. I didn't know it was Field of Dreams was based on a book, actually. I might read this. It came out in E. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right now. I love Wikipedia. It came out in 82, and the author W.P. Kinsella is a Canadian author. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And the main character was named Kinsella,
It says
Ray
here that
Kinsella.
yeah, and so wait, is W.P. Kinsella, is that a female or a male?
He's a male. But
Okay,
in the
he
book,
said that what?
no, in the main character in the book is named Ray Kinsella, which was the same last name as the author.
Yes, and here it says I made sure to make when he's talking about J.D. Salinger, I made sure to make him a nice character so he couldn't sue me.
Yeah.
And then it says in addition to the character Kinsella in the story, a young girl, and Salinger also used the surname of Catcher in the Rye, Holden Caulfield's friend Richard Kinsella. So that's where that name comes from.
Yeah, there you go.
Have you read Catcher in the Rye?
I did. I have read Catcher in the Rye. I almost put that on my list. I have more of a funny story of when I bought the book, which is I always share with people, because I went to the Walmart in the States one night to I was leaving the next day, but at 12 they were going to put out the new releases for DVDs when we still bought DVDs, and I was buying a Marvel movie that was coming out. And while I was in the store, it was like 12 in the morning, and I pick up a copy of Catcher in the Rye, which was like on sale for $4. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna buy this book. So for a while, I'm just walking around the store with nothing but Catcher in the Rye in my hand, which is, knowing the history of that book and the guy who killed John Lennon, is kind of creepy to see somebody walking around a store at 12 in the morning with
And the
nothing
guy
but.
who shot Ronald Reagan.
Right. Or is that is. Is the guy who shot Ronald Reagan, or the guy, both of them, right, had Catcher in the Rye?
Both. Yeah. It's associated with a lot of like shootings and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I shouldn't be walking around the store with nothing but Catcher in the Rye in my hand. Let me get a cart and like put some cereal or something in here so I don't look like a complete freak. especially in the
I'm
United
buying
States.
gum real quick so I don't look like a weirdo.
Yeah, exactly. So that's when I bought Catcher in the Rye. I was in my late 20s when I read it, but I enjoyed it. It was good. It was weird, but I understand, like I appreciated it.
I need to reread it. I read it as a teenager, and I think a lot of it went over my head. I just remember just being like, "This is boring. Like, I don't understand." Like, I think a lot of the good stuff I just didn't really understand as a young man.
Yeah, definitely. I think in high school they make you read really good books that you're not ready to appreciate.
Oh, like a lot. I think all the other books on my list are stuff that I read in school that I resented because it was schoolwork and I didn't want to do it. But then, as I got older, I was like, "Fuck, that was good. I want to own that book again."
Yeah, I did the same thing. All the high school books that I didn't read or I bought Cole's notes for, I read fully as an adult, and I was like, "This is brilliant," but I shouldn't have read this as a kid because I couldn't appreciate it. What's next on your list?
All right, mine is also one that I read literally in grade five, and it
Wow.
still resonates with me. And it's like it's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Did you ever read it?
No, I haven't read that. But of course,
Oh
C.S.
my
Lewis.
God, so good.
Yeah.
You seen the movie?
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's been like adapted into those newer ones, but also with like the old BBC ones. I remember like we read it in grade five, and then we watched the BBC version of it. I just like I love this book in particular. I've always tried to get more of like I think two or three times in my life I've bought the entire collection of the Narnia books. I think there's seven of them, and I like started at the beginning and tried to like read them all through. And I really don't like them as much as I like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. That to me is like the ultimate Narnia one, and the rest of them don't really have the magic that The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe has. Like, there's something really great about it. I remember reading it in school, and just like the whole like lamppost and the snow, and then seeing like Mr. Tumnus and like the White Witch and all this shit. And I mean, a lot of it is like it's very, very. I don't think I realized it as a kid, but it's just like an analogy for Jesus, basically. Aslan is just Jesus. He literally gets like murdered and practically crucified and then is resurrected. So it's like so see-through. But as a kid, I didn't realize that type of stuff. I just thought it was cool fantasy with like these talking animals.
Right.
And I still like, I absolutely, I could, I think it's only, I don't know how many pages in this book. It's just over 200 pages. Like I could rip through this in the afternoon if I wanted to. And I love The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe so much.
Yeah, C.S. Lewis, of course, was famously known for his faith, and a lot of the fiction he wrote reflected, or they were all analogs for, his Christian viewpoints on stuff. So it makes sense that, like you said, it was just a that what was the character's name? The lion? He was just basically Jesus.
Yeah, Aslan.
Yeah, so makes sense. But yeah, great, of
Yeah,
course. Go ahead, Shane, go ahead. I'm
I
interrupting you.
lost you.
No, you're there. Go
Sorry.
ahead, go
Oh, I
ahead.
thought I lost you. Yeah, there's just that delay there,
Yeah,
whatever.
yeah.
Yeah, so Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I still love it. To me, it's like perfect, just fantasy, magical world. Love it. I love the idea of going through a wardrobe into a snowy land. And even when it like, you know how people hate heavy snowstorms. I love it, and it always reminds me of like Narnia.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. That's good. My next book also turned into a movie. You guys talked about it actually on one of the episodes you did with Martin. I think it might have been like a Valentine's Day episode. But this Nick Hornby, High Fidelity. You ever read the book?
Oh yeah. I've not read the book, but I've read about how people were annoyed that the way they adapted it, and they thought that the movie was going to be really Americanized and stupid, but it actually like it's its own thing that turned out really well.
Yeah, it's true. The movie's a good adaptation. The book, I really enjoyed the book, especially at the time that I wrote it or read it, sorry, because I was always a big fan of music shops, like any type of sort of hobby shop, comic shop, music stores, and I was spending a lot of time at a local record shop that was by my house. where they would sell and buy and trade CDs. And I appreciated the setting of the book, much like the movie, where they're always talking about music and how it, you know, what you can tell about a person on the things that they select and the perfect playlists and how you know all of these songs that we engage with are kind of become soundtracks of our life. And reading the book, there was all these little phrases and what's the word? Analysis of music and life and the comparison that I was able to relate to at the time. So sometimes the what you're going through in life, if you read the right thing, it hits you. So this was one of those books where I enjoyed the movie, didn't realize that it was a book, but when I had read the book, it's its own thing as well. And if you enjoy music and enjoy being educated on music, or even having that sort of people like us who have strong opinions on art and things that we like that are very subjective, this is one of those cool books to read that deals with, of course, life and relationships and romance and, you know, getting to certain ages or stages in your life where you kind of question what have you been doing all this time, while at the same time using art to find meaning in those stages. This is one of those perfect books, I think. And I think Nick Hornby also wrote, it was another book that turned into an Americanized movie, Fever Pitch, it's about soccer, but they turned it into a movie about baseball. But he was also known for writing that book, and I think About a Boy. He's also known for that book, for that movie or that book. So, but High Fidelity, highly recommend it. Cool book.
Yeah, I feel like I should read that book, actually. I've only seen the movie, which I really, really love the movie, but yeah, I think like it's the so in the book they do like the top five lists and stuff like that.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah. It's cool. It's a really cool book.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I
I
think you would
also
like
like I
it.
love that part too, where I don't know if it's in the book where he's like reorganizing his record collection and
He's,
that
yeah.
the dude from the shop stops by like he said, what are you doing, like alphabetical or like, and he's just like he calls it, he says it like chronological, like of his life, that's how he's like organizes records, and the guy's like, whoa, like that's fucking far out. And I resonate a lot with that, because I always think like certain sometimes a certain song just brings you back to like a time in your life when you're like, and you start feeling nostalgic.
Yeah, exactly. And that's and when you are a person who has those type of connections to things, whether it be a book or even music, you totally understand that sort of logic that other people be like, that's so weird, just put them away. Like I when he did that, I'm like, I totally appreciate that. I get it. Yeah. What's next on your list?
Yeah, all right. I like it. Here, this is another book that I read in school that I actually, I think I did like this one in, at the time too. It's called My Side of the Mountain, which was actually turned into a movie, but like a Canadian movie that wasn't like, well, it wasn't like a big blockbuster or anything like that. But yeah, it's about this kid. What's his name? Sam Gribble. And he lives in New York in like a really packed apartment with a lot of siblings and his family, and he's like really kind of into nature and stuff like that. He starts reading up, and this is set in like the 40s or 50s or even maybe the 60s or something like that. But he finds out that his like family had this old farm in like upstate New York, and in the what's the mountain range up there, the Catskills, is that what it is in New York?
Yeah, I think so.
And he like goes off to, yeah, he goes off to live in the Catskills by himself, and you just like kind of like reading his essentially like his diary of like the journey he went on. He just like takes a bus up there and gets off, and there's adventures and tries to find like his old like family's land and the landmarks, and then you just struggle with him as he tries to survive, and then you see him sort of like doing well and thriving, and he becomes notorious as this like mountain kid living up in the woods that like some people find. He steals a falcon from a nest, and he trains it to become like to get hunt for food and stuff like that for him. It's just it's goes well with my I have my fantasy of going off and living in the woods alone, and I like to read books about that type of stuff.
What's the title again, and who wrote it?
The author is Jean Craighead George, and the book's called My Side of the Mountain.
And what grade were you in when you read it?
I think grade 8, I think so.
Oh.
Yeah, I remember my grade eight teacher, Mr. Sweeney. He was a real hard man, but like he was really into like earth and nature and stuff like that. So and like Native American issues and stuff like that. So we read a lot of books about that. You know, we read a lot of like Farley Mowat and stuff like that. And I remember specifically like this one, My Side of the Mountain. I really like took to it immediately. You know, it's just like because this kid finds like a big like a giant tree, and there's like a rotten part in it, and he like hollows out the rotten part, and he like basically makes like a little tree house for himself. And I just remember being like, fuck, man, like one day I'm just gonna go do that. I'm just gonna go live in a tree house.
Yeah, that's it's so funny how the things that we get introduced to, like in high school or even in middle school, they have this sort of they kind of have a an influence on the things that one day you aspire to be or appreciate, and they come from that. You always remember that teacher who put that little, I don't know, that jewel in your mind. You know what I mean? Even with like what I was saying about Shoeless Joe, I'll always remember that teacher who gave me that book. The way they take it off the shelf or just hand it to you, how they later on you become kind of like that person in a way, appreciating those things. And you always talk about that dream of one day just going and living in the wild.
Yeah, I always say, yeah, I always think I'm gonna go. I still have fantasy now, even though as I get older, it's I'm less likely that it's gonna happen. Not that it's gonna happen, but I always like literally had this like fantasy about just going and living off the grid and just trying to survive on my own. So I like to watch movies and read books that are like about that type of thing.
Yeah. Well, you can appreciate what the experience is in a way by watching it and, you know, having that sort of empathy with the characters. It does the trick. My Side of the Mountain. Okay. Let me see. My next on the list. So, the have you ever read Ender's Game or heard of Ender's Game?
Yeah, I've heard of. I don't know about the book itself. I just know that didn't that author write like Iron Man or something like that for Marvel at some point?
Yes, exactly. Orson Scott Card, he's a very controversial guy because I mean, I didn't get this when I read his books or know this about him, but he was a lobbyist for a lot of like anti-gay marriage groups and all that sort of stuff. So he's very vilified today, especially. And when the movie came out
Okay.
for the book, it didn't do quite as well as a lot of people who were fans of the book. It didn't really do make a mark because people were boycotting it because of him. But the book series itself is a very good series if you can separate the person from the art. But he had the first book. I don't know if you've seen the movie or read the book. It was kind of like what Hunger Games or Divergent sort of was later in the 2000s, but he wrote this in the 80s, and it was like a book that really dealt with warfare and you know future. It was very sci-fi, but it's like taking children in the future, taking children and training them to become war strategists to fight a war against an alien invasion remotely because of aliens having invaded Earth and losing battles to them and preparing them for what would come next. But what's cool about it is that you go into this space station with these kids who are like the elite of their age brackets, who are problem solvers and have the ability to strategize, and they put them in this like kind of, I guess, what would be equivalent of the Danger Room in X-Men. But they have these teams where you got to kind of like basically do play a game where you capture the flag or make it to your enemy's gate in the zero gravity field, and you've got your team that you're working with. And what's cool about the book is just understanding human behavior and psychology. And when you put it's you know like with Lord of the Flies, that psychology between children, when you put them in a certain setting, what happens. This is kind of like that, but the book that I'm referring to is a sequel, which is called Ender's Shadow. So there's a minor character in the main book of Ender's Game who's referred to, and it's part of his squad of his team that he's in part of the training at this space station. But the second book tells the story completely from his perspective, and all the things that you see happening
Okay.
in the first book, you see the part that he actually played in that story, which is really intriguing and adds a whole other level of psychology and seeing how one decision can influence everything happening from other people to achieve the goal that you want to achieve. So it's really like a commentary on, human interaction, intelligence, psychology, but also government and why sometimes things happen the way that they seem to happen, who gets put in charge, who are the right leaders to have there. It's a really interesting book. I'm not doing it anywhere near the justice that it deserves, but the sequel to Ender's Game is the one that I really enjoy. It was called Ender's Shadow, and the main character's name in that book is Bean. It's great. I would highly recommend it to people who can maybe get past the controversy of the author himself. So Ender's Shadow, that would be my next pick.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm reading the Wikipedia right now. So it came out in 99, actually, this one.
Ender's Shadow came out. Yeah, Ender's Game, I think, was written in 85 or something like that.
85. Yeah. Okay, cool. I like it. I'm reading it right now. Kind of reminds me of like, I mean, obviously it's probably not the same thing, but some of the stuff like they're talking about, it kind of reminds me of like, obviously what were those fucking movies with the man. The one where the big bug aliens are attacking, they're like soldiers fighting like the big bug aliens. You know what I'm talking about?
That's
Man,
it.
I can't think of the name of it right now.
That's not Ender's Game? That sounds like Ender's Game.
No. It was with that guy. What's his name? Casper Van Dien or something like that. He was like, "Fuck, man, I can't think of the name," and now it's like, it's annoying me. Hold on, I'm looking it up right now. Where is this? What are those movies called? Fuck, I can't think of it. Looking it up. Hold on a second. This is not interesting. Starship Troopers. It
Starship
reminds me of like
Troopers.
Starship Troopers.
Okay. Yeah, there's.
Kind of like aliens that they're fighting.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting study, just even on warfare and all like propaganda, all these different aspects of it that really and some of the dialogue that they have within the book is just really thought-provoking. And I didn't expect. I read Ender's Game twice because it's one of those books you can go back and get something else out of. Really interesting series.
Have you ever seen Soldier with Kurt Russell?
No, I
Oh,
haven't.
it's like they take these, it's like they just train these kids from birth to be like soldiers, and they're like, they just raise them, like they don't have any like affection or anything like that. They're just literally just like raised as soldiers to be like the ultimate soldiers, and Kurt Russell's like the main like head guy, and then they end up coming up with these like more like genetically modified better versions of those guys, and then so like Kurt Russell's guys are like obsolete, and like I don't know, it's pretty fucking cool. It kind of reminds me a little bit of that too.
Yeah. The movie had a really cool cast. I thought it would do a lot better. Like Harrison Ford was one of the main generals, Viola Davis, Ben Kingsley was in it. Like it was a pretty deep cast, and it's just a shame that it didn't really leave a mark for sequels to happen, but
This
whatever.
is Ender's Game, the
Yeah.
movie Ender's Game.
The movie, yeah, the movie that they made.
That came out in, I'm looking at it right now. Oh, that came out in 2013.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it didn't really make much money.
No.
Probably because he's
Yeah.
a homophobe.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay. But they didn't make Ender's Shadow? Well, they're probably not going to make any more Ender's movies after
No,
that.
I don't think. Yeah, and a lot of people were like, don't support him, don't, do anything, don't support his comics. So his what once was an illustrious career is no longer really on the radar in a lot of ways. But the books are still good.
Is he, I guess he doesn't write comic books either anymore.
I think he was slated to maybe write a Superman story, and that changed very fast. But the only thing I know that he did write was the Iron Man stuff for Ultimate, the Ultimate line.
Yeah,
And
I remember that
and
Ultimate Man. That's when I first heard of this guy.
yeah, and they did make a comic book series of his of the Ender books. There was a Marvel did a whole series of those, but yeah, I haven't heard much about him since. What's next on your list?
All right. Here I have this is what my number four, I think. This one is like one of my favorite books of all time. I also read it in, I think, grade eight, and then really didn't appreciate it back then, but I recently bought it in the past few years and reread it. And I love it. It's by Margaret Craven, who I think is a Canadian author, and it's called I Heard the Owl Call My Name. You ever heard of it? Most people never heard of it.
No, I never heard of it.
Yeah, so it's like I think it's set in like the early 1900s, or yeah, I think so. And it's about this like, what is he technically? He's like a priest, or I can't remember what, but he's like for the church. Oh, he's a vicar. What is a vicar? That's kind of like a priest, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So basically, like the bishop of, like, they send him out to this village of Kingcome, it's called, and it's like the last sort of almost untouched native villages left in like North America at this point. And they send him out way out, so it's like BC, like the very edge of BC, like on the ocean. And it's like dealing, he's trying to like win over and teach these like Native Americans, and he's like starts to learn, like most of these stories too, it starts to learn like more of their way of life and becomes like, starts to really feel like at home. But like you find out really early in the beginning of the book that he's dying. They don't really say what he has, but they know that he's only got like a few years left to live. And then so one of the bishops is like, I'm going to send him out to this place because this is where I'd love to like spend my last few years of life. And but he doesn't know that he's going to pass away. Like he's just going there dealing with this like mission of like, I'm going to do this for the church and I'm going to win over these Native Americans. And it takes him a while, but then he finally starts to feel at home with them. And then later on, you realize like they kind of, the Native Americans that he's like of the village, they kind of realize that he's going to die soon because they see him like, you know, thinning out. And so, man, he doesn't really even realize yet that his health is failing, but they kind of all, and they sort of take him in as like their family and stuff like that. And it's a fucking amazing book. And it's just like dealing with the everyday life of these Native Americans and like they're not openly resistant against like the American, the Americanizing of like North or whatever you call it, like the British and the French taking over like North America and like pushing the natives out. They're, for them, a lot of their life still hasn't changed because they actually, they're like on the edge of the continent. They didn't really get pushed, you know, throughout like a lot of other native tribes and stuff like that did. So like for them, a lot of their life is the same, but a lot of them, they, you know, they deals with them, you know, they spend a lot of their money on, you know, alcohol, drinking. They have the same sort of problems. And it's just a mind blowing book. Like I remember reading it last year and I was like, got towards the end and I was like, yo, I can't even read this in public. Cause I'm like tearing up. It's just such a good book.
And what's it called again?
I Heard the Owl Call My Name.
That's a pretty heavy book to read in grade eight, it sounds like.
Yeah, and but it's also, it's like, how many pages? It's like, it's just like 150 pages.
Oh, okay.
But you go on quite a journey with this guy.
Yeah.
What?
No, I said, yeah, no, I was agreeing with you. It's funny how sometimes those
yeah,
short
it's,
books have such an impact.
Yeah, I definitely didn't really appreciate it as a young kid, but as I read it, as I got older, I was just like, holy hell. Like, and it's one of those, like, this is, I think, the only one on my list that I would say it hasn't been adapted into something, because it's one of those where it's like, I really don't know if, like, a film or a TV show or something could do it justice. It's, there's a lot more sort of unspoken type interesting things in there that aren't, like when they make a movie or TV show, they gotta go through the plot and like hit these notes and stuff like that, where some stories just don't work like that. Like this doesn't have a big, like, you know, climactic ending or something like that. Like it does in a way, but it's not something that would translate well to film or TV. Like it literally works as the novel that it is, and I think it's I don't know, it's just really, it's one of the most beautiful books I've ever read, and it really just makes you have a stronger appreciation for life and being alive.
Right. So it can't be dramatized for entertainment's sake as much as it can be consumed as an experience when you read it.
Yeah, I think it's just it's like it's one of those things that I think it would be very hard to adapt into another sort of medium. Kind of like, you know how like Alan Moore talks about like he didn't want a Watchmen movie because there's so many things that he does in the graphic novel or the comic book that are it's only designed to be that. It's not designed to be a movie or a TV show or even a novelization. Like they did things very specifically and it only seems to work on in that medium. And I think for this, and also I'll talk about it later too, the Catch 22, there's a lot of things where it's like there's just things that I don't think you can translate well into a mainstream sort of TV show or movie or something like that.
Yeah, I
There's
think
things that are gonna get lost.
I think 1984 is kind of like that. As much as there's something you can dramatize about it, there's a really heavy component about that book that you can't visualize that or put it in motion as much as you have to read it to just understand it. Have you read 1984? You right?
Exactly.
Like you'll never do that
Yeah, I
movie.
read it a long time ago.
Yeah, you'll never be able to put that in movie form to really make the same impact that the book makes on you. 'Cause I was told later after I read the book, like, oh, there's a movie for it, but it wasn't very good. And I'm like, I can't imagine a this movie ever being good because half of the book is him reading a book.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's different ways they could try to do it, but yeah, there's just certain things that I don't think you could just like capture like the feel of it. Or
Yeah.
like even have you read Animal Farm, like Orwell's
No, I haven't read that one.
books? The whole thing is basically just it's like an analogy of like communists, I guess, like Russia at this time, right? Like, and like it's like satire about like Stalin and stuff like that, but done through like a farm and an animal and showing like how communism works. And like, but I don't know if I'm trying to see if there's ever, I guess there has been adaptations they've made into movies, but like, I don't see how Animal Farm could ever become like, I don't think you could ever do it justice as a movie or a TV show. It's like these fucking talking farm animals
Yeah.
based
No.
telling you about communism. Like, it doesn't work.
Right.
It only works in the novel form.
Right. Something, and that's like even with Watchmen, right? The way you described the way that you described Alan Moore describing his book makes you appreciate that medium a little bit more to see like, oh, you can only this story can only be told this way, and it's special like that. It's cool.
Yeah, and they obviously like they adapted Watchmen into a movie, and it was like a pretty decent version of what you'd want from a Watchmen movie. But there's just things in there that are going to be lost that you just don't get that when you read the comic, the way that Dave Gibbons laid out a page and things that are in the background and that type of thing, that they just you don't get that in the movie versions of it.
Right.
Kind of like also like I don't know if you've ever seen Scott Pilgrim the movie. Like he, I think a lot of people who like Scott Pilgrim would like this Michael Cera version of the movie. But for me, there's just like there's a way that he lays out pages and tells stories and stuff like that. It just doesn't translate into a film for me.
No.
Like it's gonna be like you can appreciate them separately, but the comic book is for a reason. It has certain things that you can only do on that page.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I watched both the movie as well as read the books, and you won't get it by the movie. It might be visually cool, but you just won't get what's good about it unless you read the books, I think.
All right, you're what do you got? You're number four.
Number four. This is a very well-known book that is a very well-known movie, probably one of the most famous adaptations. Other than the last one that I'm going to pick, it's Jurassic Park by Michael Crichton.
Yeah, I was just waiting for you to say Jurassic Park. I
Yeah,
knew it was going to be on the list.
I read Jurassic Park a lot later in life. I didn't read it when it was like popular as a movie because I was young, but I read it. I bought this version of it where it had Lost World and the first one in this very nice bound volume. And so I read the first half, I guess, of this book between of the bound that copy that I have of it when it was relaunched. The movies were relaunched with what's his name there? Chris, oh, what's the guy's name?
Was Pratt?
Chris Pratt, yeah, when they did that series. But the book It's the movie's a fine, adaptation, definitely made for to be a blockbuster. But what I liked about the book was the amount of science that you actually are exposed to, the understanding the business of and marketing of amusement parks and how people will do just about anything to cash in on our planet and messing around with things that are way above our right to mess around with in order for a dollar, and seeing just how chaotic things can get, which is kind of like what we're experiencing now in a lot of ways. But there's a lot of things, obviously, in any book, scenes and action sequences that you haven't seen in the movie that are much more intense and exciting. But even the character, have you read Jurassic Park?
I read it a long time ago, like right after when I watched the movie, and then I
Okay.
was like, I gotta read this book.
Yeah.
But
Even.
I don't know, when was that, grade 6 for me or something like that? So I remember the book was a little bit more violent, and I remember like the old man dies in the book where he lives in the movie, that type of thing.
Yeah. So there are definitely differences, but the characters like Ian Malcolm and his whole, a lot of the dialogue he has in the movie is very interesting, but even more so in the book when he explains his chaos theory and when he's explaining just how, Mother Nature kind of will always take care of itself. This planet will always take care of itself, but it will remove the thing that's a threat to it. It always resonated with me. And I've been telling people that a lot lately. The same thing from that book, I've been saying to them a lot lately. Like, look at what we're experiencing, what's happening. Mother Nature is healing herself, whereas we're disposable in the big scheme of things. So it just it's what sometimes you read things, even though they're very well known and part of pop culture, they're part of pop culture and well known for a reason, So reading it later, I appreciated it more for the what the book itself was, even though Michael Crichton's books always seem to become movies. This one was really good, and it's if you like the movie, you'll more than likely like the book, but you'll appreciate a lot of things from the book that you won't be able to experience from the movie. So that was a recent thing that I read in the last few years that I actually did enjoy, and that struck a chord with me even to this day. Well, Jurassic Park, yeah, I'm lame.
No, I like that. I like the I like I mean, obviously I love the movie Jurassic Park, but I love like just even the like the concept of Jurassic Park is so cool because it just taps into that. You're a little kid, and we're all, I think every young boy was probably obsessed with dinosaurs for a bit. So I think it's really cool to see that come like, and then the way they did it as an amusement park, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I think I need to go back and read the book actually, because I love the movie. The movie's one of my favorite. It's actually probably one of my favorite experiences of seeing a movie ever, because I remember being a little kid, and
Exactly.
it's like one of those movies where it's like you wish you could see it again for the first time.
Right. Yes. And that's the thing, right? The
Like, I just
movie,
remember being blown away by this movie.
yeah, the movie really trims off a lot of the things in the book that, for the spectacle aspect of it, Steven Spielberg really took what the conceit of the book was to capitalize on the product that you'll get for, like, he took what the book was talking about or criticizing doing and really brought it to life, where the brand of Jurassic Park became something, which is kind of what the book was criticizing. It's very interesting. I don't know if meta thing is the word. It was very meta the way Steven Spielberg took it and actually created an amusement park in a way of this brand. And when you read the book, you kind you
I mean, I'm gonna reread that. I'm gonna reread this book.
yeah, it's but it dig it deals with a lot of the science and genetics of things, and because Michael Crichton was if I'm not mistaken, a doctor. He was actually had his PhD in a lot of stuff. So there's a lot of medicine and science and business practice that is all discussed along with this adventure that makes the book very different from the movie.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at Michael Crichton right now. Oh, he's dead. I didn't know that. He died in 2008 at
Yeah,
66 years old.
he was pretty young.
Yeah.
So that's my number four.
He went to Harvard Medical School. Yeah, nice. All right, cool. I like it. I don't think you need to be embarrassed about choosing
No,
Jurassic Park as a
no,
book. I think that's
I'm
great.
no, I'm not embarrassed. I'm just playing around. What's your number
I mean,
five?
it's no Tolstoy, but
No, it's
whatever.
no, it's no Hemingway, but.
Right, my number one is, we talked about it already, is Catch-22. It's like my favorite book of all time, and I can reread it so many times. I can open it up to any point in the book and just start reading it, and it's fucking brilliant on so many levels.
Yeah, I have this book. It's
Here,
on my
quote.
shelf. I really want to read it one day. I just know that I got to be in the right headspace to head down that
No,
rabbit
you
hole.
don't. Just start reading. Hey, you don't have to, like, there's no perfect time that this is going to be, like, all right, now is the time to read Catch-22. Just start reading it. Start reading all your Superman comic books and read some good shit.
I read good stuff. Avengers
Yeah,
is good.
what? Nothing.
Murder Falcon.
No, that's not good. Yeah,
Planetary.
Murder Falcon's good. It's, yeah, all right, fine. You're just naming stuff you know I like, so I can't compare. but yeah, Catch-22. Okay, I'm looking out here, so it's Joseph Heller's the author, and it's I guess he wrote it. It was published in '61, and there's been like so many editions of it. But this is one of those things where I remember my older brother was like super into reading a lot of these like classic books I've read. It's because of him being like, "You need to read this," and like I remember him telling me to read Catcher in the Rye and reading it and not really appreciating it. But I remember specifically as a teenager reading Catch 22 and immediately just being like, "What is this? I've never read anything like this." It's a lot of things I think. While I've mentioned how a lot of stuff as a young man went over my head, I don't know how more of this like didn't go over my head as a kid, but like Catch-22 was brilliant on so many levels, and it just clicked with me, and I was just like, "What is this book? This is like, it's somehow like ridiculous and slapstick funny, like almost like Three Stooges level like stupid slapstick comedy, but then at some points it's like." Horror and violence and a lot of it is like black humor, and this is again like I was saying about how things don't translate. I've watched there's a movie about Catch-22 from I think it came out in the 70s, and then just last year George Clooney produced a 6-part series on Catch-22, and I always watch these things because I'm like, well, I love the book, I gotta watch these movies and TV series, and it just like they always seem to go like there's definitely the concept in Catch-22 of it's basically showing you the horrors of war and why war is so bad, like most horror movies, I mean sorry, war movies do, like they show you war is a horrible thing and here's like a real story about this person. But with Catch-22, there's so much like dark humor in there that just if they don't translate well to film and movies. So like when I watch the adaptations, they always go they just sort of lean more into the like the fact that Yossarian's terrified of war and he doesn't want to die and that type of thing. And they lean so heavy into that and just becomes really like depressing and dark. Where when you read the book, there's so much like nuanced little pieces of humor throughout the book that just they never seem to capture it right when they do adaptations. But like I find the book brilliant on so many levels. The wordplay is so brilliant. I'm pretty sure like he came up with the concept of a catch-22 that's become like part of like our the lexicon, right? I'm pretty sure Joseph Heller's the first one to like come up with this, and it comes from this book, the idea of a catch-22. But like there's just so many, it's just littered with all these little catch-22s during this like fictional story about this character, these characters in World War II setting that are like bomber pilots in off this island of what's it called, Pianosa. It's off the like near Italy basically, and then them going into Italy for like their leaves from duty for a while to like and like dealing with like prostitutes and stuff like that. It's such a brilliant fucking book.
Yeah. I think when I say like I've always heard great things about this book and how layered it is, like it's not any one thing that you could put your finger on. And I think that's why you it's not so much that you have to be in a right mood, but you have to be in a place to take it in properly. 'Cause if you don't, it'll be like one of those things where I don't get it and you give up on it. So you got to kind of be in for me, I think you got to be in that sort of place where you can absorb all of the different things that's happening in this book and be ready to appreciate it. That's what I mean by being ready
No,
for
I
it.
think you've built it up in your head where you've
that you have to do. You know what I mean? Like, you think,
Maybe,
like, if I
maybe.
don't truly sit down and appreciate every second of it, then I won't, I'll be missing things and I'm doing myself a disservice. Where it's like, just start reading it. If you like it, you'll be really into it. And if you don't, you won't be. Like, I can understand why someone might read this and not get it or not like it. I can totally
Right.
understand that. But for me, it's this, the first 3 pages in, I was like, this is brilliant.
Okay. I definitely gotta get around
Like,
to reading it.
it opens in a hospital with the guy, like Captain Yossarian, who's like your protagonist, although it goes over a giant cast of characters that are go from like horrific to ridiculous throughout the whole thing. Like there's a character whose his rank in the army is Major Major, and his name is Major Major. Like, his dad wanted him to be a major in the army, so he named him Major Major. So then he gets the rank, and so his name's Major 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 Major. And it's just like, it's so fucking stupid, but it's so brilliant at the same time.
Right. Okay. Catch 20.
So
You've.
yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, it opens with him like in the hospital, and then they're just like, it's like Yossarian in the hospital pretending, constantly trying to get out of active duty so he doesn't have to fly his missions, because he's just doing everything he can to get out of flying bombing missions because he just doesn't want to die. And it's like, it's the opposite of the character where you're like, they're heroes and they're brave. And so yeah, it's like he's the opposite. He's just a giant coward, and he's just doing his missions, and he's just trying to like hit his number of missions so that he doesn't have to do any more missions. But they keep raising the number of missions, so he has to keep flying them, and all he wants to do is just not die.
That's funny. But I
It's
get.
brilliant.
Yeah. Okay. I gotta embark on this journey then.
I think you should just start reading. Just read like the first chapter and then just see where you're into it.
Okay, I'll give it a shot. So my last
Yeah, I
book.
also found out, like, sorry,
No, go ahead.
before I'll just cut you off a little bit. Sorry, I didn't mean to. There's an
No.
overlay. But yeah, I actually, for some reason, although I've loved this book for many, many years, I didn't realize there's like a sequel to it. At no point did I ever look up Joseph Heller and go like, what else has he written that I shouldn't like? So I bought Closing Time, which is a sequel he published in 94, which I think I'm kind of like you. I'm afraid that it won't be as good as Catch 22, so it's sitting there and I just have not read it yet. But then I did find that there's another book. When I went to buy the sequel of it, I went to B&V, I found another book that was just a collection of short stories that he's done. And some of them are sort of missing chapters or edited chapters out of Catch 22 that just sort of adds more to Catch 22. But then there's all these other cool short stories that he did, which I read that and I was like, this is fucking great too. Like, as far as just short stories go. But I still have yet to read Closing Time, which is the sequel to Catch 22.
Well, I hope when you do read it, it lives up to the expectations, or it's not a what's the word? A disappointment of a sequel, like sequels tend to be sometimes. So I'll
I
read.
think I had to drop my expectation of it and just read it and just appreciate it for what it is, because it
Yeah.
probably won't be as good as Catch 22.
Right. So you read that one, and I'll read Catch 22.
Okay, we'll compare notes.
Okay. So my last pick,
All right, now you're.
my last pick is one of the most well-known movies of all time, well-known novels of all time. You know what it is?
Frankenstein.
No.
I
No.
don't know.
Mario Puzo's The Godfather.
Oh, I guess I didn't really realize that was a book.
Right. The movie, critically acclaimed. I don't know anybody who thinks the movie sucks. Most people would rank it amongst the
I'll tell you
best.
this, I've never seen it.
No? Wow. Oh, you give it a shot. I don't know if you like those type of movies, like mafia movies, but this goes beyond
Yeah,
the.
I do. I don't know
Okay.
who.
Yeah, this is like the best of them all, just because it's not just a shoot 'em up, whack a guy, this, that, and it's very much a family story. Father and sons sort of a story, coming of age tale. And if so, you've never seen the movie, but the movie's brilliant. It's a great adaptation of a novel, if I've ever seen one, probably the best. But the book, what's cool about the book is that it takes a time to journey into the lives of a lot of the characters who are introduced in the movie, in like the famous scenes at the beginning where you see Don Corleone or Marlon Brando in this case, for people who want a visual, kind of being in the office at his daughter's wedding and dealing with all of the people who come to visit him there. A lot of the characters are kind of analogs for like Frank Sinatra, who was, you know, there's a character in the book named Johnny Fontaine who's his godson, but it's very similar to Frank Sinatra, and it goes through all of his life.
Okay.
And there's chapters just going through Hollywood and him, where the story begins with him and what he asks of Don Corleone, where that journey takes him. And then there's a portion of the book that deals with one of his sons who is having an affair. There's a famous scene in the movie where he actually leaves the wedding and goes with one of the bridesmaids, and they're, you know, having their sex scene. But the whole story about her life continues on, that you wouldn't get in the movie. And then Godfather Part Two tells the story of the movie. Godfather Part Two tells the story of young Vito Corleone, how he kind of establishes himself in North America and ends up becoming the Don. Well, that story that you see in the second
Vito
movie,
is the Brando character.
Vito is the Brando character, right? So
Okay.
the story of young Vito is also included in the Godfather novel. So what you see in these two epic movies, a lot of it is in the one main book. So you get a lot of the history of actual mafia, where it began, why it began in Sicily, what its original purpose was, and just the function of the inner world of the mafia, but also the honor that Vito Corleone had established as a man and as a father in this ugly sort of world. So there's so many different elements of that you see in the movie that you appreciate, that get clearly fleshed out and explored in the book. That I've read this book twice. I think I got Daph to read the book, and she's not an avid reader necessarily, but it's so good. And then of course the story of Michael Corleone, from him being, you know, a person who defies the family business and wants to become, you know, an Ivy League person who went to the army and fought for his country. He wants to embrace the American dream, realizing that perhaps when push comes to shove, the American dream is a joke, and he becomes, you know, everyone knows, the successor of the family business. So you go through that whole journey with Michael Corleone. So I love that book. I love the movies, but the book is great. And if you want to read a wonderful tale of that is filled with organized crime, but also, you know, family dynamics and you know, the mafia and the way the politics within it all work, it's really cool. And of course, a little bit of Italian history, which I might be a little bit biased to, even though I'm not Sicilian. But you are, so you might enjoy it.
I'm not Sicilian.
You're not Sicilian, you're Calabrese, sorry, right? Your father's from Calabria?
My grandparents are from Calabria. Mainland Italy, all right? Not
Okay,
Sicilian.
sorry. Me and you are both
Are you
mainland
crazy?
origins, from mainland Italy. Sorry. My
Where
bad. I'll edit that out.
are your parents from?
My mom is Molisane, which is like not too far from Rome, but it's kind of a spot in Italy where nothing happens. It's kind of like a boring spot, they say. So.
No, I always laugh because I know, like, a good friend of mine, his wife is Sicilian, and like even Gabe Sapienza, he's Sicilian, and I always tell him how they're not like real Italians. Like, it's I remember when I was a kid, I would go to there was an Italian barber shop, and there was four barbers there, and just one of them was from Italy, and the other guys were from Sicily. And my grandfather would tell me, he would like say hi to Peter. He would literally, the other guys didn't even exist to him. Like, this is, they weren't like Italian. It was just like, say hi to this guy who's Italian, and the other guys like don't exist to him. And I just always think about that mentality where it's like literally from like Calabria, like you can see Sicily. Like, it's like so close, but like to them, they're just like, it's so different.
Yeah, it's so silly. Yeah,
It's crazy.
it's true though. And some Sicilians don't, they refer to themselves as Sicilian. They don't even sometimes embrace the being Italian sometimes. So.
Yeah, they consider Italy like a different place. But it's also like, I don't know, when you see the history of like the Roman Empire, and Sicily was basically like a battleground that, like Carthage owned it, and like so many different like countries at some point owned control of Sicily. So it's not actually like truly just like an Italian place too.
Yeah. Oh, this has been good. I actually enjoyed doing this list. It was different, something we haven't done before. And I like that it's been added to the library of episodes. Good job, Shane. Thank you for the idea.
Real books, bro.
Real books. I actually read. Now the world knows I actually have the ability to read a book.
Don't
Well,
know. And it sounds like you just watch the movies and say that you read the book.
don't say nothing, man. I've read the Wikipedia on all the books.
Gonna read the Wikipedia of all the books you told me to that's on your list.
Right. And I'll try to start
I
reading
think I need to
Tarantino
watch The
quicker.
Godfather. No, I think now it's time.
Yeah, no, you should definitely. I'm not gonna build
Because
it
I
up.
just went through like a, sorry, go
Yeah, I'm not gonna build it up because it should speak for itself. It's just a good movie.
No, it's just there's no reason I shouldn't. I haven't. I should have watched it already because like I also like I love the Scorsese. Like I just recently rewatched Casino and Goodfellas, and like I love that. I watched like a little bit of Sopranos. So I'm just like, yeah, why haven't I watched The Godfather? So maybe I'm due now. I don't know
Yeah.
if I'll read the book, but I'll watch the book for sure.
Yeah. Give the movie a shot. It's really good. The first two movies are excellent. Part three, don't even bother. But you might like part three because you always like the weird sequels. So I'll leave it up to you to decide.
Do you mean, like Karate Kid 3 and Man 3?
And Rocky Five.
Five? Rocky Five is great.
I know you think it's great.
All
All right, dude.
right.
Well, thank you
All
so
right, we
much
did.
for your time. Yeah, we did it. We're just under 2 hours. This was a good episode. Thank you for spending the afternoon with me. I
Jesus
appreciate it.
Christ.
I know. Well, I hope you enjoy the rest of your
I gotta
day.
go.
Okay, I'll talk to you later, bro.
Later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Later.